Okay, so are you ready to go on a little adventure with me today?
Always up for an adventure.
All right, excellent. The Church of Tinkerbell podcast.
Faith, imagination, the power of belief.
Love and acceptance to make the world a better place.
What would happen if we all just tried to see the world through the eyes of a child again, even for a moment?
It's a beautiful thought, isn't it?
It is.
The Church of Tinkerbell.
The Church of Tinkerbell. All right, I'm intrigued.
You know, if you ask most people about fantasy or sci-fi or even just daydreaming,
yeah,
the usual answer is probably, well, escape, right? Getting away from reality for a bit.
Sure, that makes sense on the surface. But the material we're looking at today really flips that idea.
How so?
It suggests imagination isn't the escape hatch. It's actually maybe the most practical tool we have, like a compass.
A compass?
Yeah, a compass pointing toward what reality could be, and maybe more importantly, what it should become.
Okay, interesting. So our mission today is sort of unpacking that.
Yeah.
How envisioning better worlds.
Yeah.
And one source mentioned doing this with radical kindness, whimsy, glittery.
Right, that framing.
How that becomes the first step toward justice. Turning fantasy into a tool for, well, real social change.
Exactly. I mean, just think about it for a second. Any huge step forward we've made, democracy, civil rights, environmental movements.
Okay.
They all had to start as an idea, often a really improbable one, just living in people's heads and their collective imagination.
That had to be dreamed up first.
Fully dreamed, yeah, before anyone could figure out the practical steps, the laws, the actions to make it real.
So let's really dig into that main idea, imagination as a practical compass for justice. How does just thinking about a better world actually lead to, you know, moral vision and then action?
Well, the crucial link is possibility. Imagination basically shapes what we believe is possible.
Hmm.
If our vision is stuck only on what already exists, then meaningful change kind of stalls, right? Because we literally can't imagine an alternative.
So imagination gives us the what if.
Exactly. It lets us step outside the current rules, the status quo, and ask, okay, what would genuine flourishing look like for everyone?
And that connects directly to something really powerful in the sources. This idea of imagination as the rehearsal space for empathy.
Ah, yes, that's key.
We talk about empathy, but often, like, it's just a feeling. This argues it's more like a skill you have to, well, practice. Like hitting the gym for your heart.
That's a great way to put it. It's active. Empathy means mentally putting yourself into someone else's story.
Right.
So when you read history or you invent a character, or even just try hard to picture what someone facing, say, systemic bias goes through daily.
You're flexing that muscle.
You are. You're rehearsing compassion. You're trying to understand their emotional world from the inside.
I think that's why stories often hit so much harder than, like, policy papers or statistics.
Oh, absolutely.
You could read a report showing a big jump in poverty, maybe 40%, and you get it intellectually, the scale of the problem.
Right, the numbers are clear.
But then you read a novel or see a film about one person. One family is struggling with that reality, and suddenly it bypasses your brain and just grabs your heart. It makes an abstract issue feel urgent, human, compelling.
It really does. Statistics might inform the mind.
But stories reshape the heart.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to the core transformation here. Without that imaginative leap, justice can become rigid, just bureaucracy, rule following, stagnant.
Okay.
But with it, guided by that compelling vision of what could be, justice can, as the essay puts it so well, bloom into love made visible.
Love made visible. I like that. It feels active, tangible.
It is. It's care in action.
And this idea of seeing the future, it brings us neatly to the next point, using fantasy worlds themselves as ethical laboratories.
Yes, like prototyping for society.
We get to run these complex, maybe radical social experiments on paper or screen, without needing to blow up reality first to see what happens.
It's invaluable. Think about it. If you want to genuinely design a society free from oppression, you can draft it in fiction.
So, like, what if there were no prisons?
Exactly. If you take that structure away, you immediately have to invent entirely new ways to handle conflict, harm, accountability, healing.
You're forced to be creative.
You have to imagine viable alternatives. Or push it further. What if money just wasn't the main organizing principle?
Whoa. Okay, that's big.
How would resources get shared? What's value if it's not tied to profit? These are huge, messy questions in real life.
Almost overwhelming.
But fiction lets us test drive those structures. See where the friction points are, what breaks, what might actually work.
And we have some amazing examples of this already, right? The sources mentioned Ursula K. Le Guin.
Oh, absolutely. The Dispossessed is a classic example. A masterpiece, really.
She created two whole societies, right? One sort of like ours, capitalist, hierarchical.
And the other, on the moon in ours, was anarchist. Based on cooperation, sharing resources.
But it wasn't just a perfect utopia she painted.
No, and that's the genius. It was an ambiguous utopia. Anars had solved things like poverty, hunger, through cooperation.
Oh, yeah.
But Le Guin rigorously tested it. She showed its struggles too, problems with intellectual stagnation, bureaucracy creeping in, even intense social pressure to conform.
So it showed freedom isn't automatic. It needs constant work.
Exactly. Every choice has trade-offs. The lab isn't about finding perfection. It's about testing the viability, the reality of radical ideas.
And then there's Octavia Butler, her parable series that felt different, more about resilience.
Definitely. Butler throws you right into societal collapse, profound destabilization.
Yeah, it's intense.
And she forces you to imagine how community and survival work when all the old systems fail. What matters then?
What does matter then, in her view?
Interdependence, adaptation, shared purpose. Her characters don't win through politics as usual. They build new communities based on shared values, on trust.
So her fiction is almost like a manual for rebuilding.
In a way, yeah. A deeply practical guide for building strong community bonds, especially when things get tough. High-stakes preparedness through fantasy.
And we should probably also acknowledge that this practice,
yeah,
it's much older than modern sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
The essay mentioned indigenous myths.
That's a vital point. Those stories, creation myths, they've always functioned this way, establishing our connection, our interdependence with the earth, with each other.
Reinforcing that relationship.
Precisely. That wisdom, sometimes dismissed as just myths, holds crucial knowledge about being caretakers, not owners. It's an imaginative framework for ecological justice that's incredibly relevant now.
Which really highlights the stakes here. If imagination is this powerful, we need to protect it. The source is warned about the risk of shrinking our dreams.
Yes, that's a real danger. And it often happens quietly through cynicism.
How so?
Well, when you're constantly told why change is impossible, why things have to be this way, despair sets in.
You start to believe it.
You internalize that the world just is the way it is. And that's dangerous because when our dreams shrink, our courage does too. They're linked.
And this is where the political angle gets really sharp, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oppressive systems, political, economic, whatever, they rely on us having smaller dreams. They need to control the imagination.
How do they do that?
By mocking utopian ideas, right? Mm. Calling visionaries naive. Insisting that realism means staying within the lines, the established, often unjust boundaries.
Don't rock the boat.
Exactly. They want us to believe this is the only way things can be.
So just daring to imagine a world where everyone genuinely thrives, not just a select few, that itself is resistance.
It absolutely is. It's refusing to accept the current limits as final. Realism without imagination just keeps things as they are.
Okay, but there's a flip side, right? Mm. Imagination can be twisted. History's full of terrible things born from distorted dreams. Supremacy, exclusion.
A crucial point, yes. Imagination isn't inherently good. It needs calibration.
So how do we calibrate? How do we keep the compass pointing towards actual justice, not domination?
The source material argues the compass needs an anchor. And that anchor is a specific kind of love, not just sentimentality, but fierce justice-making love.
Fierce love. What does that mean, practically?
It means a love that insists fiercely on the dignity of every single person. No exceptions. Regardless of who they are, what they've done, where they come from.
Okay.
It's a love that confronts injustice head-on, holds power accountable, and does the messy, difficult work to make sure the dream of freedom truly includes everyone. That's the anchor. It's uncompromising.
That fierce, grounded love. It connects nicely to the next concept.
Yeah.
Sacred play. Sounds a bit whimsical.
It does sound whimsical, but it's presented as something deep and intentional. It's the how we translate that fierce love and big vision into practice.
So what is sacred play? Not just goofing off.
Definitely not just goofing off. It's intentionally practicing future possibilities through telling stories, making art, role-playing, even focused daydreaming. It's like participating in prophecy, as one writer put it.
Participating in prophecy.
Wow.
Yeah.
When a community gets together and imagines, say, a world without shame, or tells stories about radical cooperation, they're planting seeds,
yeah,
making that future more tangible now.
Instead of just waiting for the future, you practice bits of it.
Exactly, start living it. Which brings us to how we can actually do this. The sources gave 4 specific practices, things we can do daily.
Okay, let's hear them. Actionable steps are good.
First one, vision journaling. And this isn't like a to-do list. It's writing detailed sensory descriptions of the world you actually want.
Wild, generous, bold descriptions, it said.
Yes, don't censor the ideal. Really paint the picture.
So maybe like spending 5 minutes describing what your street would feel like if equity and ecology were the top priorities. Mm-hmm. What's the sound, the smell? What are people doing?
Precisely. It makes the abstract concrete in your own mind. Second practice, story exchange.
Sharing the vision.
Exactly. It can't just stay private. Sharing these imaginative stories in your community, with friends, family, it builds shared momentum. It fertilizes other people's imaginations too.
Spreads the vision beyond just policy ideas.
Mm.
Gets to the underlying desire for something different.
Mm-hmm. Third practice, this one might be the trickiest, embodied rehearsal.
Meaning?
Trying to live a small piece of that dream right now. Prototyping the future in your daily actions.
Can you give an example? Like, what would that look like?
Okay, so if your vision is a world without shame, maybe you practice being intentionally vulnerable or non-judgmental in small interactions today.
Hmm.
Or if you dream of mutual aid, practice radical generosity today. Even if it feels small or clashes with the current system, you act out the future values.
You're basically modeling the world you want to see, inhabiting it.
Yes. You make it feel possible for yourself and others. And finally, number 4, be intentional about your cultural consumption.
What we read, watch, listen to.
Absolutely. The input shapes the output. We need to actively seek out stories that challenge us, expand our moral horizons, fuel our sense of possibility.
So be mindful. If all the stories you consume are cynical or say, change is impossible,
they shrink your courage.
Yeah.
You need to actively find the Le Guins, the Butlers, the visionary artists who offer those alternative blueprints, fuel the possibility engine deliberately.
Wow. Okay. This whole deep dive has really shifted how I think about, well, even just daydreaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big takeaway for me is engaging your imagination isn't running away from reality. It's actually refusing to accept reality's current unjust limits. It's vital resistance.
Beautifully put. It connects the highest ideals, love, justice, dignity, with very practical daily things we can all do. Write, share stories, act differently. It reminds us we're always walking towards the world we imagine. We just need to make sure that inner compass, anchored by that fierce love, is truly pointing towards justice for all.
Which leaves us with that really challenging final thought from the sources, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The question isn't whether we dream, because apparently we all do constantly.
Right.
The real question is,
yep,
which dreams do we choose to follow?
Mm-hmm.
Something to really chew on this week. Thanks for going on this little adventure with me today.
Anytime.
And listener, keep sprinkling that fairy dust, all right? We'll see you next time.